Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us on a later edition of Into the Night with Rick Ballew, where we allow the ladies to set the table. And we come on in, eat nothing but meat, late night, into the night. Yours truly, Rick Ballew, on this election-filled Tuesday. Congratulations to Lenny Curry, buddy of mine, the mayor, 4 more years. Let's prosper. Let's make Jacksonville better. People are moving here at a record pace. I can tell you that because where I live, around Bartram, around Julington Creek, it is growing like a zit. I mean, it is unbelievable. Everywhere I look. Do you notice all the dust today
in Jacksonville? No.
It was unbelievable out around 9B and 295.
Like regular dust, not pollen?
Well, I don't know what it was. I thought maybe there was a fire, and maybe I'm just ignorant here, and there was. I didn't listen to the regular news today. I don't listen to the regular news really at all. I just don't. I get my fix when I need it by going online. That's just the way that I roll. But, I mean, I went to pick up my kid today and got her. And, I mean, just 295 to Bay Meadows back and forth. I mean, it was just insane. I didn't know if it was low clouds. I didn't know if it was fog. I didn't know if we had high winds and it was like just a dust storm. So if something did happen and I'm, you know, not aware of it, I do apologize. But I've been engulfed today in the world of sports because that's what I do. And it's what I love. I've been doing it for more than 27 years. And I found myself today really having a difficult time getting out of bed at around 10:44 Eastern, well-rested and ready to take on the day. And I grabbed myself a cup of Joe. Cup of Joe, named after the great Joe DiMaggio. I sat down on that lazy boy in a bathrobe. Just think of Tony. Think of Tony Soprano, just a much better looking version, and that's me in the bathrobe, sucking on a cup of Joe, trying to put together and thinking you got 2 hours tonight to try to meet the obligation of what Jacksonville, Florida expects out of you, Ballew. What are you going to do, and what rolls right in front of me? $430 million over the next 12 years to Mike Trout, who is absolutely wonderful. He is a tremendous baseball player. He is a bona fide five-tooler. This guy can hit. He can hit for power. He can run. He flashes leather. And he's got a good arm. He's also an incredible human being. As far as his overall character, you probably cannot ask for a better example of a professional athlete today than Mike Trout. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, 430 mil, great, taking it all in. And all of a sudden, bam, these nameless, faceless people on ESPN, I don't even know who they are anymore, they start rolling into the same dialogue, in the same conversation. Mike Trout, when it's all said and done, is going to be the greatest baseball player in the history of the game. So here I am, well-rested, robed up, sipping on my Joe, getting ready for a great Tuesday in Jacksonville. And just like that, my Tuesday late morning is on the verge of being ruined. How can anyone be so idiotic to say that Mike Trout is going to be the greatest baseball player to ever play this game? That is beyond stupid. And it's so disappointing to see 20-somethings and 30-somethings on ESPN who have obviously never done the research. They're so lazy that they're just trying to make a statement. They're trying to create a headline. And it'd be so easy for ESPN to just really go through color analysts throughout the league. Go find Jack Morris. Go find Jim Palmer. Go find Jim Cott. You know what I'm saying? Go find Ken Singleton. Go call Vin Scully, who I know is retired, and he's a former play-by-play guy. But why fill it up with 20-somethings and 30-somethings who never watched Hank Aaron play, never watched Willie Mays play, never watched Roberto Clemente play? I heard someone say that Babe Ruth wasn't a great five-tool player because he didn't have a good arm. People forget that Babe Ruth came up in Major League Baseball as a pitcher. I have nothing but great things to say about Mike Trout. And if he is to pull this off in front of our eyes, how cool would that be? But why is it that people do it to such an extreme that we live in a society now where everything has to be best of all time? Tom Brady, he's the best quarterback we've ever seen. Is he really? Okay, out of all the people who say that, how many of you watched Johnny Unitas play? Tiger Woods, he's the greatest golfer ever. Is he really? Did you watch Ben Hogan? Did you see the battle when there really was a battle between Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus? Tiger's never had a rival. We tried to grow one between Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, but Phil always fell. He really did. He never really competed against Tiger when we saw it. LeBron James, Michael Jordan. In my opinion, there's no comparison. I grew up with a great team, organized athletics. The decade of the 80s, the Celtics and the Lakers. You'll never find better. Okay? You won't. As far as team sports. Everything else we're talking about now is individual. Greatest ball player of all time. Greatest golfer of all time. Greatest baseball player of all time. Well, the greatest teams of all time were those Celtics and Laker players. I watched Michael Jordan come in and be much better. And now we hear Jordan to, you know, Jordan and the King. And King and Jordan. And Jordan won six in a row and missed a couple of years because of gambling. And came back and won them again. And for crying out loud, the King has gotten there and lost. Well, isn't getting there worth something? Isn't Tom Brady getting there and losing worth more than Terry Bradshaw not getting to a fifth one? I certainly think it is. I'm not going to penalize LeBron James for making it to the NBA Finals and losing. You know, you listen to people who will tell you that Wayne Gretzky was the greatest hockey player of all time. Did they ever watch Gordie Howe? Did they ever see Gordie Howe as a two-way hockey player? A fierce forechecker, a guy who obviously played defense. And Gretzky cherry-picked. Gretzky hung around the blue line. He let Messier and Curry and Coffey and everyone else, Anderson, do all the dirty work, and then bingo. You get to the other side of the blue line, and the magician of Wayne Gretzky is going to put the puck right on your tape. He wasn't a two-way player. He didn't drop gloves and fight. Like Gordie Howe, like Bobby Orr, who redefined the game as a defenseman. I've heard people try to compare Orr to Gretzky. You can't. That's like trying to compare Randy Johnson to Barry Bonds. You can't compare a defenseman to a centerman or a winger. You can't compare a pitcher to a position player. It just, we're all to blame. But stop being so lazy. People listen to you, especially when you're on the mothership like ESPN. You're there for a reason. You have skills. You're talented. But why do you have to disrespect those who have played before you by calling a 26-year-old kid like Mike Trout the best baseball player of all time? Never even hearing of Babe Ruth. Or Hank Aaron, or Lou Gehrig, or Willie Mays, or Frank Robinson, or Mike Schmidt, or Mickey Mantle, or Joe DiMaggio, or Ernie Banks or Roberto Clemente or Ken Griffey Jr. or Alex Wright. I mean, it's just asinine. And we're all to blame. I mean, I came back here yesterday. What did I say? That was just the best players' championship that I've ever covered. Not to pat myself on the back, but I at least referenced it time and again like this. I've been covering the players since 1997. The last 4 days were by far the most exciting and the best players' championship that I ever covered. Therefore, if you were been around here like David Lamb forever, and people his age who were 70 or so, let's say, you know, Gene Fournette, people like that who've been here who are 70 and have been here since day one, they can tell me things that I don't know. That's why I preface it by saying from 1997 on, it's the greatest players' championship that I've ever seen. Maybe I'm being just a little bit too pissy tonight. I don't care. Do some freaking homework. Respect the game. Respect the people who have played the game. Don't be such a jackass and go out there and say that Mike Trout is the greatest baseball player of all time. He's not even close. He's done it for 7 years, and he's been tremendous. But he's not even in the same neighborhood as Hank Aaron. He's not even in the same neighborhood as Willie Mays. He's not even in the same neighborhood as Barry Bonds. Why would you do that? Why would you lower yourself as a journalist or whatever the hell it is that you do? At least I should credit these people for not putting Mike Socia on the hot seat the way that Stephen A. Smith did today. Here's Stephen A. Smith, who makes, what, $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year? This guy is making a major mistake a week. Mike Socia, after 19 years, announced his retirement. Stephen A. Smith gets on the mothership today and says that this contract will now put Mike Socia on the hot seat. What I'm getting at is we don't have to always overdo it. We're allowed to sit back and enjoy sports and take it for what it is. Everything doesn't have to be the greatest ever. Trevor Lawrence doesn't have to be the greatest quarterback to ever play college football because he started halfway through the year for Clemson and won them a national title. Let's watch him play his sophomore year. Let's watch him play his junior year. Zion Williamson doesn't have to be the greatest basketball player we've ever seen because he's played 20 games. Where did that come from? Did it come from Hollywood? I mean, did it come from music? Give me a rock and roll band today. You're a young buck. You're 22. Give me a band.
It's all pop now. I don't know any
true rock and roll bands.
One Direction.
All right, One Direction.
Actually, they're not even around anymore, are they? Jonas Brothers.
The Jonas Brothers. Now, when people criticize and evaluate music, do they say, the Jonas Brothers, they're the greatest of all time. They're better than the Beatles. They're better than the Rolling Stones. This is what ESPN is doing with Mike Trout. With Leonard DiCaprio? He's the greatest act. He's better than Jack Nicholson. He's better than Gary Cooper. He's better than John Wayne. He's better than Humphrey Bogart. No one does that. Why do they do it in sports? Why do I have to get up today bright and early at 10:44 a.m. and be told that Mike Trout is the greatest baseball player of all time? He's not even freaking close. He's not even close. Why is this happening? And how come no one's doing anything about it? Besides me. It's all a pack of BS. Just, you know, it's almost like ESPN treats you, the sports fan, as a pack of friggin' sheep. We're going to throw it out there, and you'll believe it. All right. I'm going to grab some of your reaction on this. Maybe you can calm me down off of the massive palm tree here on Hogan Road. Why does it happen this way? Why does everything have to be the best? Why does LeBron have to be better than Michael? Why does Tiger have to be better than Jack? Why is Tom Brady the greatest of all time? Mike Trout, at this age, he's brought in more than 100 ribbies twice. He's hit more than 40 home runs once. He's sensational. Jim Edmonds was as good, or if not a better, defensive center fielder than Mike Trout. Look at his teammate Albert Pujols. He dwarfs him if you look at his numbers lifetime. Plus, he's got World Series rings. Don Baylor was the greatest teammate of all time. He played for the California Angels. Reggie Jackson hit clutch home runs in the month of October for the A's and the Yankees and did it somewhat, at least there, for the Angels in 86 before they blew that 3-1 lead to the Red Sox. More of a clutch hitter than Mike Trout has ever been. Why do we allow people to say things like this? It's so wrong, it's so unfair, and it's not an indictment to Mike Trout. It's an indictment to those who talk about Mike Trout. It's awful. It's god-awful. We got a lot to do. Your reaction to that, 641-1010. We are just barely underway into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tonight's show brought to you by Advanced Disposal. My buddy Greg Huntington, by far the best ever, over at Advanced Disposal.
The GOAT.
Right now, they've got a $1,500 signing bonus. That is, Greg just invited me to play in a golf tournament coming up in about 10 days, which I'm very excited about. You know, one of the advantages of the new nighttime slot, I get to play in many more golf tournaments. So, you know, no matter what happens to you individually, when you take that brand new door that is open for you, well, enjoy it. Because you may think early on that it's not all good. It could end up being that way. I'm loving these nighttime hours. All right, CDL drivers, $1,500 bonus for Clay County. Just apply online. Go to advanceddisposal.com/careers. Jaguar fans, we'll get to you. Matt Manicharian is going to join us at 9. We'll get the very latest to him. Of course, he's with SIS, his handbook, and everything that he has put together with the NFL draft. We spoke with him at the Combine. We'll get an opportunity to get some new input from him now after Nick Foles has come on board. And what he thinks the Jaguars will do at 7 as well as at number 38. So that's coming up in about 35 minutes at 9 with Matt Manicharian, who will join us here on the program. Right now I want to grab some of your phone calls, 641-1010. And I just want some overall reaction to the world we live in now sports-wise where everything is the best ever. And why that is, I don't have the answer for you. I'm going to sit back and listen to you. Maybe you have it. I hope that's the case because I want to learn something here tonight. Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Let's kick it off by going to Devon. Welcome. Hello.
Hello, what's going on?
Hey.
Hi, my name's not Devon, but I'm going to let you have that because that's the topic today. I'm teaching you something.
Okay.
It's the difference between being pissed off and old and grumpy. And that's what you sound like right now. First off, let's take your theory of you can't be dominant. They can't be dominant or the best ever because he hasn't played enough. He hasn't put enough numbers up, correct? That's what he wanted to run with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if we took that theory, that's why Tony Boselli shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame right now.
Right.
If we took your theory. Okay,
right.
So that alone means, no, that can't be true either. Now, I'll take it a step further. If you're a dominant player in an arena full of, I mean, compared to the latter athletes, these guys, these gladiators are so much more superior. You know, so you can see it. You said it yourself plenty times, Rick, how these guys are fast, or these guys are strong, or these guys are this, these guys are that. They're better. They're better. It's when Nolan Ryan threw 100 miles per hour speed ball, you know this, you're older than me, but that was a big thing.
Yeah.
Is it a big thing now?
Well, I mean, listen, the game has changed. Nolan Ryan was also throwing the ball when he was on top of the hill. They've lowered the mound to make it, you know, better suited for hitters. It's a totally different game. I understand what you're getting at. Mike Trout and today's players are bigger, stronger, faster than they ever were, you know, in the decades prior. But you can't match his body of work right now compared to these other players. And that is why I'm fascinated that people are trying to sell us that he is going to be the greatest baseball player that we have ever seen.
Well, let's take boxing, for example. You can't be boxing may be a hard, but let's say this, though. If Babe Ruth hasn't faced 100-mile-per-hour pitchers every game or every other game constantly, how can you not say if someone that has done it constantly and is successful and putting up great numbers at doing it, wouldn't you say I would go with that guy before I would go with the guy that hasn't been proven to handle that kind of...
You know what? And that's fine. And that's a great argument. I mean, we can go back and forth on that. It's a totally different game. There were no pitch counts then. Starting pitchers went 7, 8, 9 innings all the time. The relief pitching element of Major League Baseball wasn't even a forte then. You didn't have different types of pitches the way that you have now. But you had guys who threw the ball very hard back then. That was always the case. And you look at when Babe Ruth played and through the era of, you know, the old Ebbets Field and the way things were right there in New York when you had the New York Giants and when you had the Brooklyn Dodgers and you had the New York Yankees. Besides that short porch in Wright, those were enormous stadiums. Look at every stadium that is built today in Major League Baseball. What do they all have in common? They're bringing in the fences. They're lowering the mound. People complain about the juiced-up player and the juiced-up baseball, yet Major League Baseball itself, all it does is make rules who benefit the hitter. Compare the dimensions of an outfield now in Oakland compared to back when Jimmy Fox played or Hannes Wagner played or Reggie Jackson when he was there. Compare the outfield dimensions then to now. Look at those kooky cutter stadiums that went out. Municipal Stadium, Three Rivers Stadium, Riverfront Stadium. Remember they put them up all over the place? They were the same brand of stadium in Pittsburgh and in Cincinnati and in Minnesota, no matter where they dropped them. And look at the stadiums that have replaced them. And look at the outfield and look at the dimensions now compared to the way they were then. And then consider on top of that, they've lowered the mound. You know, the year that Frank Robinson, and I talked about these numbers when he passed a few weeks ago, put up the, a triple crown in an era where I forget what the overall team batting average was or Major League Baseball's batting average was, but Frank Robinson's numbers were just absolutely insane in a time where no one else was being able to do that, offensively speaking. And there's a guy right there that's probably mentioned in the top, 25, 30? 35 Major League Baseball players to ever play this game? How can you even compare Mike Trout right now to Frank Robinson? I mean, Frank Robinson won an MVP in both leagues. Frank Robinson won a World Series. Frank Robinson won a Triple Crown. It sounds like I'm down on Mike Trout. I'm not. I love Mike Trout. I'm down on those who cover Mike Trout, who are trying to force-feed non-baseball fans that he's this great. And that's just wrong. And we're seeing it all the time. And I'm just trying to figure out, I know you said old and grumpy. I don't think it's old and grumpy. I don't think it's old and grumpy when you look at a 30-year-old on TV the way I was looking at this young lady today, and I'm guessing she's 30 years of age, telling me and everyone else who was watching that Mike Trout is on his way to becoming the greatest baseball player of all time. And I'm sitting there looking at this young lady saying, I wonder if she's ever read about Hank Aaron. I wonder if she's ever watched any video on Willie Mays, on Mickey Mantle, on Stan Musial. All right, maybe that's going back a little bit for her. How about Barry Bonds? Why don't we ever watch any film on Barry Bonds? On Ken Griffey Jr.? On Alex Rodriguez? And how can you just make a blanket statement like that? The Jags have the best defense in the NFL. Jalen Ramsey is the best corner in the NFL. Okay, those two are fine. Because you're talking about right now today. But if you start saying, this Jaguars defense is the greatest defense we've ever seen in the NFL, then wait a minute. Hold on here. Or if you start saying Jalen Ramsey is the greatest cornerback we have ever seen in the NFL, it's a wait. Hold on here. And you see the difference? If this same young lady today and the analysts they brought on, including Mark Teixeira from his vacation in the Bahamas, if they said he is the greatest baseball player right now in the game, then I wouldn't even have blinked twice. He is the greatest player in baseball right now. But there's a difference between saying you're the greatest baseball player right now and in 7 years of service saying he's on his way to becoming the greatest player to ever play the game. He's not going to hit like Ted Williams. He's not going to hit like Tony Gwynn. How much in the Angels ever? Look at Rod Carew. What, he win 7 batting titles? Trying to tell me Mike Trout's a better hitter than Rod Carew? Than Tony Gwynn? Than Wade Boggs? I mean, back it up with something. He's phenomenal, but you can't be that dismissive of these other phenomenal players as well who did it for 16, 17, 18, 20-plus years. Can't do it. He's put together a career like Kirby Puckett put together in a short period of time. His on-base percentage is phenomenal. I hate the new math. I hate sabermetrics, the whole wins above replacement. I mean, he's dominant in that. But there's no way that I believe these folks on ESPN are basing it all off of the WAR statistic. I watched Barry Bonds when I did overnights out of Chicago, where there were some nights where he didn't even get one pitch to hit. The studio I was in was surrounded by television cameras, television monitors. A huge part of my show was when games would end, we'd always have a stringer on site, whether it was on ice, on the hardwood. As I said, I talked to Byron Leftwich more when he played Thursday night games at Marshall than I ever did when I was here in Jacksonville, when I got here and he was still around. And I would get reaction after games. That is what we did. That was half the show at night. So I'd have to keep an eye on everything that was going on. And you drop a month like September or October, where you got baseball and all these games going on, and then all of a sudden you got a full slate of NBA games and a full slate of NHL games and a full slate of college basketball games, and you still have those Thursday night college football games. I mean, you got everything going on. You're trying to do all these things at once. Well, you know what? It didn't matter what was going on. When Barry Bonds came to the plate, that's where my attention was. And I would watch certain nights where he'd try to be protected by Jeff Kent or whomever in the lineup. And Bonds was going to go 0-for-1 with 3 walks, usually all intentional. I watched nights where maybe he got one or two good pitches to hit and 4 at bats. Just because you don't like Barry Bonds as a person doesn't mean you should diminish what he did during his career. And the whole steroid era, okay. That's a little bit more fuel for you to choose. And I think in time that's going to go away as well. It's going to be just like the amphetamines period of Major League Baseball, the greenies and the reds. It's just going to be another part of baseball when you look back upon it. Because more and more people are admitting that they were around it or they were involved with it. And even though Bonds remains the poster child for it, it's only a matter of time before he makes his way into the Hall of Fame. And he should be in, and Clemens should be in, and Manny Ramirez should be in, and Alex Rodriguez should be in. You want to battle about the others? I'll listen to you. Those four were phenomenal. Manny Ramirez couldn't play defense. Let me ask you this. There's a couple of right-handers. With the game on the line, the eighth inning, ninth inning, and two outs, who do you want at the plate? Manny Ramirez or Mike Trout? Well, it's an impossible question, right? Because Mike Trout never plays on winning baseball teams. And Mike Trout doesn't have to deal with pressure because he's in Los Angeles where the folks show up in the second and they leave in the seventh. Try going 0 for 8 during a Friday, Saturday, heading to a Sunday series in Boston if you're Manny Ramirez and see how that fan base reacts. Look at the money that Trout's making, Machado's making, and Harper's making. Out of the three, the only one who's going to deal with any pressure is Harper. Do you think they care about baseball in Los Angeles? Do you think they care about baseball in San Diego? I mean, these guys are going to cruise through life. All the power to them. They're going to destroy Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. His first 6-4-3 double play ball, those Philly fans will cup their hands and boo. That's pressure. But ask yourself these type of questions. Who do you want to put the game on the line? David Ortiz or Mike Trout? Who do you want with the game on the line? Derek Jeter or Mike Trout? We don't know. Because the game's never been on the line for Mike Trout. There's a huge difference. And again, I'm not criticizing Mike Trout. He's a phenomenal face of Major League Baseball. I'm criticizing those who cover Mike Trout for being lazy, for not doing their job, for throwing out outlandish, foolish statements like he's on his way to becoming the greatest baseball player of all time. That is absolutely beyond foolish. Wake up, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, the greatest baseball player of all time. Unbelievable. All right, so more on this. I know I've had some folks on the line. I do apologize. I'm a little long-winded tonight. This bothers me. I consider myself a baseball historian. Yes, self-appointed. But baseball means a ton to me. And I can't allow crap like this to be stated without me at least mixing in my two cents. And this is really a shame. What we have heard today, especially if you're a non-baseball fan. And I know there's some of you out there who are. That you have to be told this, and I really feel for you. All right, a little bit more on this. We've got some other things to mix into. We'll get to some NFL talk with Matt Manoogian coming up at 9 o'clock tonight from Sports Info Solutions. He's got his rookie handbook. We'll get the very latest from Matt on what the Jags are expected to do next, of course, after some of the moves that they made the last couple of days, including Nick Foles. All of that coming up right here, Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a ton of basketball tomorrow night. Seth Greenberg of ESPN. I think right now if you're ranking ESPN analysts, I'd have to rank Seth is perhaps the best of the bunch. He'll join us early on tomorrow night. Then we'll bring in, I think, the best handicapper out there, that is the Philly Godfather. Of course, the show is produced tonight by the best around, that is Matthew LeVay. How are you doing, young man?
I'm pretty good, Rick. You can actually call me the GOAT for short if you'd like.
Yeah, that's too cool.
All right, I take it back.
The whole GOAT. No, you're very, very cool. As I said, you're the best of the litter.
I guess only the Jordans or Bradys of the world can be called that.
I just saw a jump shot here by Indiana over St. Francis, Pennsylvania in the first round of the NIT, and it was, I got to say, maybe the best jump shot that I've seen all night. It was nothing but net.
Hand down, man down.
There you go. The best. Best ever. Tom Brady, the greatest. Tiger Woods, the greatest. Wayne Gretzky. I love the hockey pundits. People who never watch Gordie Howe or Bobby Howe play, Bobby Orr play. My idol growing up. Oh, Wayne Gretzky's the best. I just don't get it. Subjective. I mean, I hear more arguments now about LeBron James and Michael Jordan, who the best was, than I actually do about whether or not LeBron was able to knock off Golden State. Just can't figure that out. Farley Dickinson, a winner, 82-76 against Prairie View A&M. So they will move on. One winner is in, coming up at 9:10 tonight, Temple and Belmont. That is coming up again tonight at 9:10. Those are two tonight. Let's see, tomorrow night, you got North Carolina Central against North Dakota State. And then you got St. John's, Arizona State.
It's actually a close one for me, Rick. I got a couple cousins that attend North Dakota State, so go Bison.
Is that where Gus went?
That is, yeah. Gus was a former head coach of North Dakota State.
All right. So the Flying Gus Bradleys tomorrow night. They're favored by 5 against North Carolina Central. We haven't even thrown out my apology around here. I have obviously been distracted. Is I haven't even thrown out tonight's question of the night, and we're 47 minutes into the show. I think that that would be considered a failure on my part. Certainly can make the case that so far tonight this has not been my best performance. Something I'm going to have to work on. But let's get to the Exit Real Estate question of the evening, brought to you by Exit Real Estate Gallery. If you have not heard, and this is something that we absolutely need to talk about, what is going on with the NCAA? I've complained enough tonight, so I'm going to leave this conversation alone as far as a lot of my overall thoughts. But, I mean, it really is ridiculous. College football has become free agency for these kids. And I know that when you start going down this road, if you're older than, let's say, 40, kind of like an earlier caller who didn't think that I was necessarily pissed, he called me old and grumpy. And I think there's a clear difference. But if you look at the transfer situation that is going on now in college football, I think if you complain about this and you are older than 40, you are automatically going to be perceived by the younger audience as one of those who is a curmudgeon. Get off my lawn. I'm old and I'm grumpy. Because I think people that age or older will look at it like this. Tate Martell, you didn't want to take on competition. You left and went somewhere else. Justin Fields, you didn't want to take on competition. You left and went somewhere else. Hurts, you didn't want to take on competition. You left and you went somewhere else. That is kind of what old school will say to the new generation. You kids don't work hard enough that if it's not given to you, you're going to take the easy way out and go somewhere else. Am I wrong? Of course not. We see it. It happens all the time. I see it with my children. I love them. I love my two daughters, teenage daughters. I see it. I live it. When I was... People don't want to hear it. Oh, you know, when I was a kid. But there's just no way that I could pull this off with my mom and dad. Not even close. I'm just talking about things in general. It is. It's new. Kids today, if it's not going perfectly the way that they want it, let's quit and do something else. That is today. And we're to blame. Because we're supposed to discipline. We're supposed to aid. We're supposed to advise on how and why they're supposed to make these decisions and stick to your obligation. Hang with your commitment. How can we be an example where 50% of our marriages end up in divorce? And out of the 50% of the people who stay married, about 5% of you are happy. So you go from job to job and relationship to relationship. And in this case, school to school. Oh, you're not the starter? Quit. Transfer. And now the NCAA is allowing it. That no matter what it is, they're going to allow it. So we've created a question because football has been pushed up a week. We're all happy about that. It'll be on August 24th. Now that Tate Martell is immediately eligible to play for the U, who will be the starting quarterback for the Hurricanes against the Florida Gators on August 24th? Will it be Nakosi Perry, who went 8-for-98 against Florida State, but he threw 4 touchdowns and no picks, including 3 in the fourth quarter or something crazy like that, against that softest Charmin defense in Tallahassee? Tate Martell or Jaren Williams, who for like a day put himself in the transfer portal and then pulled himself back up? I know this is Miami, so it's not going to create as much traffic tonight as it normally would because we are talking about the U. So not as many votes. So right now it's overwhelming for Tate Martell. 74%, 14 for Nakosi Perry, 12 for Jaren Williams. This is great. Then I start reading the comments. Doesn't really matter, one says. This is from Carol. The SC Trojan says, no one cares about Miami football, not even their own fans. Here's a guy who tells me they all suck. That's basically, and same thing on the text line at 641-1010. It's amazing. Here I try to handcraft a question for the U, and it's like received with negativity, kind of like no one cares about Miami, even their own fans. Anyway, I tried. I really did. I gave it my best shot. Hey, you can be a part of this. Just go to Twitter, look for Ballou, BALLOU, 1010XL, and you can answer tonight's question, compliments of Exit Real Estate Gallery. Which one of those three quarterbacks will be the starter in Orlando? It's going to be the U against Florida a week early. How cool will that be this year? August 24th. All right, tonight's show brought to you by Advanced Disposal. They're hiring right now. That will include a $1,500 signing bonus for Clay County. You need a residential CDL driver's license. That's a commercial driver's license. For all of the information, just apply online. Go to AdvancedDisposal.com/careers. Let's turn our attention next to the Jags. We're 37 days away from the NFL draft. Matt Manoucherian, former NFL scout, will join us. We'll talk about how things have changed for him as far as what he sees the Jaguars doing with their 7th pick. Also want to bring in that 38th pick early on in the second round. What are the Jags going to do? Obviously, things changed at quarterback after the addition of Nick Foles. We'll begin our 9 o'clock hour with Matt Manoucherian joining Rick Ballou right here on 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, 9 o'clock in Jacksonville. Let's bring in our good friend Matt Manoucherian. Always enjoy our conversation. I received recently his rookie handbook. Of course, it's the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, the Sports Info Solutions. A former scout is Matt, both the Saints and the Browns, and it's always good to talk about the NFL draft as we find ourselves only 37 days away. Are you kidding me? I mean, after the Players' Championship and March Madness, it'll be here before you know it. Matt, how you been?
Good. How are you?
Man, I'm doing good. It's, you know, I, based on our last conversation, I told you that, I was on board for Dwayne Haskins. Obviously, the Jags didn't offer any of my input. They elected to go with Nick Foles, so let's start there. Jacksonville's decision to draft Nick Foles, and, you know, just overall, if you were in a similar position and they wanted your recommendation, would you have said, yeah, make this move, or draft the guy coming up at number 7?
So I think it's an interesting question, and I think it's got to come down to the individuals. And in this case, you know, you look at what fits on the Jaguars roster, and I think that they're kind of in win-now mode. They're kind of in their window. They're really built to be in Blake Bortles' prime right now and to have that in there. And what they've done, I think, is kind of subbed out Blake Bortles for Nick Foles as opposed to trying to start over and go through that rookie development phase. So where their defense is at, if they can keep up what they've been doing on that side of the ball, then this would stand to reason that fitting in with their kind of run-first offense, being able to bring in this RPO, DiFilippo type stuff, it could be a nice fit in terms of what they want to do.
You know, and I think of Tom Coughlin, he's a guy who's never drafted a quarterback in the first round outside of Eli Manning. I think of him as an offensive or a defensive line guy. That's what he did last year with Tavian Bryan. I'm going to ask you again about the tight end Hockerson here in a minute, or maybe Metcalf as a wide receiver. But, you know, why do I believe, Matt, when this thing is all said and done, he drafts a tackle either offensively or defensively?
Yeah, well, I love the defensive tackles in this draft. You know, starting at the top, the guys that, you know, you won't have a chance to sniff. But even coming down, I think Ed Oliver, it sounds like he could be available at this time. If he drops that far, I think that's, for me, he's an all-pro on the next level, and I think that's a really exciting player that you can get. With the offensive tackles, I don't know if you need to grab a guy in the first round. I think there's some depth in this group, but I don't know if there are any real standouts. I think all the guys have some holes in their game. So for me personally, I probably wouldn't be going offensive tackle in the first round, just given the players who you've got here. I think a little bit more defensive-minded, and I think Coach Coughlin does as well.
All right. There's been a lot of talk, despite what you just said, there's been a lot of talk about Taylor going, the Juwan Taylor, the kid out of Florida, and, you know, whether or not, you know, he's a right tackle. You select him at number 7. Jonah Williams, who worked out today, the Bama Pro Day. How do you rank those offensive linemen right now, and how do you put into either the left side or right side with Cam Robinson getting ready for only his third year, but he basically did not play a season ago because of the injury?
Yeah, so Juwan Taylor is a guy that was a little bit lower down on our list. We like him as a run blocker. I don't think there are any questions there as a run blocker. But I don't think he's a top-level pass protector right now. I think in terms of athleticism and the length that he plays with there were some questions there. So for me, I wouldn't be as high as him, on him. Who else you ask about? The Alabama kid?
Yeah, asking about Williams. Yep, Jonah Williams.
Yeah, Jonah Williams to me is somebody that's a little bit more exciting. Obviously, the injury makes things a little bit more difficult to project and not having that tape there. But in terms of what he has to offer on the next level, I think he's a little bit different than some of the guys that we've seen come out of Alabama recently. I think he does bring a little bit more athleticism and consistency to the table. But you're always going to have a little bit of that risk. You know, it's like when USC used to have a lot of these offensive linemen coming out. You were never really sure if it was just the system, because honestly, they're so much better than who they're going against a lot of the time as a team that it makes your individual job easier as an offensive lineman.
All right, so you know, you just made the point about a minute ago. You're not as high on these offensive linemen, so I do want to get to Hockenson, the tight end, and also I got a couple questions about Metcalf, the wide receiver. But before we get to those two, who do you like right now at 7 for the Jags?
Who do I like at 7 for the Jags? So if any of the defensive line talent is still available there on the board, I know that's been a strength for the Jaguars, but I don't think there's any reason to stop building there. And I think if you can get a special player, I think that's where some of the special guys are in the early part of this draft. I love where you're at with Hockenson. I think that would be a great weapon, really fitting well with what you want to do with Nick Foles in terms of controlling that middle of the field. So it's going to be a lot of RPO stuff. It's going to be a lot of putting the linebackers into binds. If Hockenson can help control the middle of the field for you there, I love that idea. And he kind of, I think, stands out from the rest of the pack as a tight end prospect. I don't think about, you know, bringing in a running back or anything like that. I think the focus would be either trying to find some sort of a weapon there, like you're saying, and I think that would be early to go for somebody like Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just go back and you keep bolstering that defense, keep bolstering that front seven with what's gotten you where you are as a team.
Matt Minichiarian, our guest, he's from Sports Info Solutions. We'll tell you about his handbook here in just a couple of minutes, give you an opportunity to check that out. He sent me a copy, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. Let's spend a minute here on DK Metcalf because, I mean, his measurables were out of this world. I mean, what, 6'3 and 3'8", 228, 27 reps, a 4'3", 340, 40.5-inch vertical, broad jump of 11'2". Then all of a sudden you ask him to change directions, and it was completely bizarre. What did you make about his awful showing at the three-cone drill as well as the short shuttle?
So I try not to make too big a deal out of any of these things. You know, just like we can't get too excited about a guy with his size and speed, I don't think we should get too down on a guy for not being able to do the short shuttles. But I think it is indicative of what we've seen with this player. DK Metcalf's our number two wide receiver in the rookie handbook. He's tied really with two other guys, N'Keal Harry, and then his teammate, A.J. Brown. And for me, you know, in terms of bang for the buck, I really like what you get with A.J. Brown, a little bit lower, being a late first round or a second round guy, being that he's produced exponentially more than Metcalf. I think we ran the numbers, and in terms of yards after the catch, he was actually ahead of Metcalf in terms of total receiving yardage.
Okay.
So that's the difference in terms of production that you're seeing from some of these receivers. But Metcalf, I mean, what he has the ability to do, what you see with the frame, it's frankly Julio Jones-like, the frame and the straight line speed, but it's not very Julio Jones-like when you see the way he produced on the film in college, and it's not Julio Jones-like when you see those short shuttle times as well.
There's been a guy here for the last couple of years, Corey Grant, who, you know, straight line is as fast as anyone in the NFL, but, you know, it's always been said about Corey Grant, he's got no wiggle. If you ask him to go left or right, that's where the problems really begin to exist, and he has gotten better, you know, through some development up until his injury last year. But let's go back to this again, the three-cone drill in the short shuttle, because I think our listeners who are draft fans, Matt, they get so enamored with the 40, but they never really, what was this three-cone drill? What was this short shuttle? This, if you could, kind of explain how important that is, particularly when it comes to running routes and doing things like that for a wide receiver.
Well, I do think that in terms of looking at a receiver and their trait, I think you want both of these things. You want speed and you want route running ability, which involves agility, balance, the ability to get in and out of breaks for sure. Now, what are you going to ask these guys to do in the scope of your team is another question. You know, when I was with the Saints, we had a receivers coach by the name of Curtis Johnson. And Coach CJ, he was awesome because I walked up to him one day. This is when we had Marcus Colston, Lance Moore, Robert Meacham, Devery Henderson. And I said, who's the best route runner on the team? And I thought I knew the answer. The answer was Lance Moore. He was the best route runner on the team to me. He had all that wiggle that we're talking about, that in and out of breaks, all that kind of stuff. Zone awareness to break things off and know exactly where to go. It was unbelievable watching him go. And CJ wouldn't say. He said, what are you asking them to do? And I said, well, I just picked one of them, best route runner. I'm asking route runner. And he said, well, Devery's the best at running deep routes, and Meacham's the best at running and going up and get it,
mm-hmm.
and Marcus is the best at boxing you out. And so it's the different traits that you're asking these guys to do. And when you have a receiver group, you have a basketball team, essentially. You want to have your point guards, you want to have your forwards, you want to have your center. So you have all your different targets that create matchup problems for the defense, and you can manipulate them that way. So in one sense, the short shuttle is important insofar as it measures your ability to get in and out, if that's what you're asking the guy to do. And the speed is important. And then when you're talking about a first-round wide receiver, I think hopefully you're finding somebody that has both the speed and the wiggle, because that's what the true number ones are.
All right. What is, you know, I know it's only one part of the measurable, but what is a good speed for a wide receiver on a three-cone?
Oh, you guys testing me on my three-cone speeds. I think below a 7, if I remember right.
Okay.
Under a 7 would be a very impressive time. You know, you're in the low 7s, like a 7.2.
Okay.
That's pretty good. When you get up to the mid-7s, you start to be concerned.
Yeah, because you were in a 7.38, and of course, the thing that I thought was hilarious that they actually had Tom Brady with a better three-cone drill than DK Metcalf and a better, you know, short shuttle, but this may be overanalyzing it. Obviously, when you watch the film, there's testing. There's also route running that they do within a game, which I would believe is more telling. All right, final thought from you, Matt. 38th pick. The Jags in to get a really good football player. Have you gone that far into it as far as your mock? Do you have, you know, I've seen tight ends in the second round. I've seen tackles in the second round. Can you give us a couple of guys that you think would fit in nicely there for Jacksonville?
A lot of depth on the offensive line. I think either of those tackles you mentioned before, along with a few other guys around there, I think there's a handful of guys that you got to do your homework on and see individually as a team what you like. But I love the idea. I think there are several players in the offensive tackle position that could be nice picks around there, or other offensive line positions as well. I think if you go pass on Hockenson, there's not going to be another high-end kind of versatile wide end H tight end in the draft. But I do think there are other guys you can get in the mid rounds there. After that, you know, a lot of the depth is on defense again. So especially if you go offense early, you could be thinking front seven early in the second round. A lot of talent there still, secondary talent as well. But I would be mostly thinking, you know, if you're staying away from the offensive tackle with the first pick, that's a nice little bubble of guys that you can expect to be able to choose from early in the second round.
All right, Matt, tell us about the handbook. It is from Sports Info Solutions, and I know you guys have put a lot of hard work into it. Tell our listeners, please.
Yeah, the Football Rookie Handbook. So here at Sports Info Solutions, we chart all the NFL and college football games from every team, every play. We are gathering the most intricate, in-depth data in our Bill James-inspired tradition. It was as one of our founders. And what we are bringing to you in the book is a combination of scouting reports, NFL-style scouting reports based on my time with the Saints and with the Browns, what we would do there. And then you also have these analytical breakdowns where you can see all the different advanced stats that we've been sharing with the teams who we work for. We're releasing to the public for the first time now in the Rookie Handbook. So check it out on accessports.com. That's ACTASports.com, and it's also available on Amazon.
Yep, and I've also just retweeted this out now with Matt joining us, so any listeners can get it off of my Twitter feed, and you can get all the information right there. Matt, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll do it again before the draft.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
There he goes, Matt Manicharian, joining us right here on 1010XL in 92.5 FM. Former scout for the Saints and the Browns. He is now the director for the Sports Information Solutions Rookie Handbook, which is very informative. Did you see this, LeVay?
What is it?
Well, it's amazing how things work at the Combine, because we heard about DK Metcalf and how he had 1.6% body fat. And I heard somewhere, actually I read it somewhere when I was on vacation, that that's unhealthy.
A lot of people, doctors are saying that you usually don't survive off of that.
Right, it's bad for your organs, okay? But if you look at this young man, and if you don't know who I'm talking about, he's a receiver out of Mississippi that, you know, if we were to list seven players right now that the Jaguars, I believe, could draft, he would be one of them. Now, I wouldn't go there. I've told you all that I would go with T.J. Hockenson. I would go with the tight end, even though the tight end doesn't fit the seventh position in the draft. I have a feeling they're going to end up going tackle. I really do, and I may be wrong. I've been wrong before. But DK Metcalf, 6'3" 3/8", 228 pounds, 1.6% body fat, 27 reps of the 225 pounds on the bench, a 4.33 40, a 40.5 vertical, an 11'2" broad jump. Just out of these, this is like a Mike Mamula, although Mamula was a lineman. This is like some of the greatest numbers we have ever seen for a skill position guy, whether it's a back, receiver, or DB. But then you ask him to change direction. He had worse numbers on the three-cone drill and the short shuttle than Tom Brady did when he was a sixth-round pick out of Michigan. Tom Brady did the three-cone drill in 7.2 seconds. This same freak, DK Metcalf, did it in 7.38 seconds. I'm going to ask James Coleman about this a little bit when he gets in here as well tonight, about just to kind of explain the three cone. Even though I know what it is, this is his forte. He can explain this with the kids that he's been working out with and training forever to tell us how important this is from a wide receiver's perspective. I think it is very important. But I think there's such thing as training and numbers and measurables to being in a game and being able to run the right route. Anyway, we'll get it from him. But compared to Tom Brady, Brady ran a 7.2, Metcalf ran a 7.38. Short shuttle. Brady ran a 4.38. Metcalf ran a 4.5. I would have to compare this, and I have to look back, and let's take a break right now, but short shuttles are always faster than your 40. Aren't you going 20 yards in a short shuttle? I mean, Tom Brady did a short shuttle in 4.38. There's no way that Tom Brady ran a 4.38 40 at the combine. I'm guessing he probably ran around a 5.51. He did the shuttle in a 4.38. Here's DK Metcalf, who set the world on fire by running a 4.33 40 straight line, yet he did the short shuttle in a 4.5. Beyond bizarre. Interesting stuff. Thank you to Matt Minicharian. All right. Again, I'll ask James Coleman about that a little bit later on tonight, hopefully during crosstalk when he gets in here. Of course, that's the Sports Den. That'll begin at 10 o'clock tonight. We push things back an hour for Helmets and Heels. Tomorrow night, Seth Greenberg from ESPN. We'll get the very latest from him on this tournament. I'm going to obviously carry most of our attention on the Seminoles and the Gators, who both play on Thursday. So we'll do that tomorrow night with ESPN Seth Greenberg. And as well, the Philly Godfather will join us tomorrow night on the program to give us the very latest from a handicap perspective or handicapping perspective as well.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, thank you to Matt Minicharian for joining us a couple of minutes ago. Tell by the way that he was going, not a fan of offensive linemen in this draft. Not a fan of Juwan Taylor at 7. The Gator, not a fan of Jonah Williams out of Alabama. That is fascinating. You know, it's the second highest rated, in my opinion, position that you draft offensively after only quarterback. But you just don't know if, you know, do you draft Williams and have him fight it out with Cam Robinson? Cam Robinson did not show up a year ago in the best shape of his life. I'll never forget who's a kid out of Utah, Hunter Dimmick, who didn't make the team. He was a pretty good, serviceable camp guy. He had a cup of coffee around here, maybe practice squad or something like that. But I remember one day out there in August, I watched him beat him 3 consecutive plays. Ugh. I'm like, you know, supposed to be your bookend left tackle. This is supposed to be the guy that is going to be a difference maker now. And, of course, he got hurt early on, so we'll see how he bounces back. But, I mean, again, there are more questions than answers right now as far as the Jaguars in this football team on the offensive side. And A.J. Cann, no one saw coming. I saw a video of Brandon Linder, who's obviously feeling better. I saw him doing triple sow cows into some water last night. Somewhere vacationing. I'll take that as a good sign. And you should too. We don't know what's going on with Norwell, and we don't know what's going on with Robinson. I mean, they were asked about injuries last week when we met with the brass, and they just weren't going to comment on it. But you can make the case right now that Cam Robinson is your left tackle and that the Jaguars will draft draft the right tackle, and they won't do it until the second round. And, of course, they signed Obwehi, who was only active for two games last year in Cincinnati after playing in, I think it was 14 games in 2017. He's really been a disaster since he was the, I think, 22nd pick in the 2015 draft by the Bengals. But maybe another opportunity changes things around for him a little bit. Not sure. Or you could draft Jonah Williams and have him be the left tackle and then move Cam Robinson over to the right side. Remember interviewing Cam the moment he got here, one of the first things I ever asked him, because remember when he got here, you had Brandon Albert as your left tackle. And that didn't work. And we were all in New England during that 3 days of practice against the Patriots when all of a sudden Robinson was inserted. So I get the feeling that, like, the mind has already been made up on Robinson. You know, if you were to put down right now five players who needed to make the biggest improvement from 2018 to 19, Cam Robinson might be number one on my list. Now, I think the answer to the question, if I threw it out to you, would, without any question, be Leonard Fournette. Because you're always going to go to skill position guys first. So that's my guess, is that you would go to Fournette one. But your left tackle is arguably the second most important position on your football team, next to only your quarterback. Do they believe that he is the guy getting ready for his third year? And it's a very important season for Cam Robinson. Remember, he was a second-round pick, not a first-round pick, so he doesn't have that fifth-year option that the Jaguars can hang their hat on. This guy's got to get good now if he wants a huge contract down the road. Now, I understand they could always put a franchise tag on him. That's why teams move up in draft guys, 30th, 31st, 32nd, Sony Michel, New England. Last year, Lamar Jackson. Why did Baltimore trade up to get to Lamar Jackson? Well, probably a twofold situation. Number one, they think he's the quarterback of their future. Number two, with a rookie contract in the first round, you get that fifth year. That's huge. I mean, look at the money that quarterbacks are signing for now once they get to their second contract. So for Cam Robinson, all of a sudden, he's in year three. He wants to get paid like some of these contracts that you've seen as of late. He better get good right now, this year. If I wouldn't put him at the top of the list, I'd certainly have him number one, number two or three. I really would. I remember last year, I thought it would be Miles Jack when I asked that question. I thought Miles Jack took a step forward, but he still left a little bit to be desired, in my opinion, which brings us now to Jake Ryan, who did officially sign today. We discussed that yesterday. It was our question of the night last night, brought to you by Exit Real Estate Gallery. There are many more questions on the offense than there are on the defense, but this becomes, in my opinion, outside of youth at safety, because you're going to have two brand new safeties with Gibson and Church gone. And yes, I remember that Church was released with a couple of games to go. But you're talking about Rodney Harrison and Jared Wilson. That's it. Outside of that, the biggest question for me is what happens at linebacker. And you're talking about Jake Ryan with a bad knee who missed all of 2018. Does he become your middle linebacker? If so, is he your middle linebacker on only first and second down? Does this make Telvin Smith expendable for a draft pick? I happen to think Telvin's got a lot of good football ahead of him. I also know Telvin missed a lot of tackles last year. Took some bad angles. There's been some talk about if they tired of him a little bit. He's a huge leader of that team. And I'm such a fan. An enormous fan. I'm just telling you what I'm hearing. Could you move Jack back over to the weak side? Excuse me, to the strong side. I mean, Leanne Jacobs played there a year ago. You know, didn't do much, but he was there. Started, but didn't play much. So we just don't know the answer to that question. I mean, who are the three linebackers? If Ryan's healthy and they go to their base defense, you can make the case right now that it could be Jacobs, Jack, and Smith. You can make the case right now that it could be Jack, Ryan in the middle, and Smith. You can make the case right now that it could be Jacobs, Ryan in the middle, Jack at weak side, and Telvin gone. I mean, any one of those are up for discussion. We'll know more in 37 days when the NFL draft comes and goes. We just don't know the answer to that question right now. Fascinating stuff. I love it. Love the NFL draft. Right around the corner. As a matter of fact, during news and notes, we do have some language now, some numbers on some free agency. Really some good stuff. I saw it earlier today. It was, who threw it out there? Heilman did. Phil Heilman did. And I saw it with him, and I, you know, bargain basement numbers that the Jags got these four players for. Swaim. I have not seen the terms yet on Jake Ryan, but certainly Chris Conley. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about that. And as well, the big man at right tackle, Cedric Oblehi. Very comfortable numbers. I mean, you read these numbers, and they're not show me years. They're make the team type of contracts. A show me year is Dante Moncrief at 9.6 million. Chris Conley, I think, is at 1.8. That is a bargain. To me, that's not a show-me year. To me, that's a you-better-make-the-team type of contract. So, anyway, we'll come back. We'll talk about that during news and notes. We do that each and every night. It's brought to you by our good folks over at truckcrashlaw.com. I feel like we've neglected the fine university, the private school, which is the University of Miami. Matt LaVey, we had a question of the night brought to you by Exit Real Estate Gallery. It involved the very latest as far as the free agency period now of collegiate athletics, including QBs at the U. How does the poll look?
Yeah, Rick, we put it out there. Now that Tate Martell is immediately eligible to play for the U, who's going to be the starter when the Hurricanes face the Gators on August 24th? Well, 71% say that Tate Martell will be the starter for the Hurricanes. Meanwhile, 13% going with Jaron Williams, and then 16% go with Nikosi Perry.
Nikosi Perry was a killer. He's a Florida State killer. Numbers on Nikosi Perry. Miami a winner. Who was the final of that? Like 24-23, 28-27, something crazy like that. Final numbers on Nikosi Perry. Nikosi Perry goes 7-4-59. With four touchdown passes and no picks. Three of those four touchdown passes happen in the second half. Canes are down by 21, but they win the game. They knock off Florida State. All right, we'll come back. Let's give you news and notes. Again, brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, news and notes brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. Coming up in just a couple of seconds. First things first, Farley Dickinson a winner tonight, 82-76 over Prairie View A&M. They are the first to advance from the first round to stay in the first round. Temple and Belmont early on here. 7:25 to go in the first. Temple up 22-19. I wonder if basketball, true basketball junkies, are really into these games. I mean, all the power to you if you are. I'm totally captivated by the NCAA tournament. I really enjoyed the conference tournament this year. You know, I think Florida State going real far into it, played into it. I thought that Florida going deep into it, played into it. But, you know, honestly, how much do you put into these games? The two tonight, and then you got, what, two tomorrow night, including that late night affair, which should be okay, between Arizona State and St. John's. I mean, that North Carolina Central, North Dakota State game, that'll lift at 6:40 Eastern tomorrow. Does this do anything for you? And I, you know, I'd like to compare it to football, but I think that's different because when you start dropping games in late August, it doesn't matter where you put football. If you put one on like a Tuesday night or whatever it is, people are absolutely going to watch football. It's different here because, you know, we're talking about the beginning of the tournament. I guess this would be comparable to some of those meaningless bowl games that are on during football season. And I don't watch all of those. But then again, that's smack dab during the middle of the NFL season. And there's also huge college football games that are getting ready to be played as well. Tomorrow's like the vasectomy day of the year. There are men right now all over this planet who are laying on a couch with frozen peas on them. I guess yesterday and today is the day where most men receive vasectomies around this earth to stay at home during the NCAA tournament. Others will play hooky. I mean, I've seen the studies before about the hours and hours and hours of production that is lost because people are pretending to stare at their computer screen, but they really have a game up or they're following it on Gamecast or whatever it is. I think it's pretty remarkable. You would tell me, I've had a vasectomy before too. I didn't have it during the NCAA tournament, but it is painful. It's more painful after the fact, just sitting around for like that 24 to 36 hour period is not plentiful. But, you know, it's something that has to happen. Before we get to an abbreviated edition of News and Notes, you're talking about entering these brackets, and people, you know, I'm not going to raise an eyebrow at you if you're a cheater. You know, if you cheat on your taxes, if you cheat on your woman, if you cheat on your diet, that's up to you. That's your business. But cheating on the NCAA bracket, that's bullshit. You're telling me people are doing more than one bracket?
It's one of my biggest pet peeves is when people ask you to be in their, you know, whether it's their ESPN group, whatever, their bracket challenge group. And no, it's unlimited entries. So it's like you got guys that put in literally, I got a guy earlier that put in 15 different brackets into one group, and I just put in like one. It's like you got no chance.
See, I don't like that. That's kind of like I see people who do that in like fantasy. They're in like eight leagues and they're like, well, you know, I've got Elliot in my Serpentine League and I've got him in my league with my bowling league on Tuesday night. But I, you know, in my other league, this guy, and I've never been able to put all that together. I mean, why not just, that's why I recommend gambling. Okay. Because in that, you know what you can do. You can't do them both. Listen, I love Jessica Blaylock. She's one of my favorite girls of all time. But when I worked with her on the radio show, she picked one team, and in the newspaper, she picked the other. I got news for you. Not only are you going to win that, you're also going to lose it. And when you win and you lose, you end up paying the VIG. You end up paying. All right, let's get the news and notes, abbreviated edition, brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. Career is over at St. Joe's for you know, Phil Martelli was one of the great, if I look back at all the guys I ever had a chance to talk to, it's one of more of the sincere guys that I've ever had a chance to interview. I really felt bad when I heard about this earlier today, because this guy absolutely loves St. Joe's. And he was there for 23 years, and he got to an Elite Eight. And you remember some of those NCAA names, like Jameer Nelson and Delonte West. And what's sad about Phil Martelli is that this is a guy then who could have had an opportunity to go to major jobs in big conferences. And he stuck with what he loved. And in, you know, a great career of 23 seasons, but when it was all said and done, he was fired today. I was very disappointed to see that earlier. I haven't talked to Phil in probably 12 years. But, and I did for quite a bit during that era. And just a stand-up guy, wishing the very best. I know he's getting up there in age a little bit. 7 NCAA trips for Martelli, but his career now over at St. Joe's. All right, a lot of things happening in the world of football. I want to give you those Jaguar numbers, as I told you I would, in just a couple of minutes. But first things first, Vontaze Burfict, who isn't on the unemployment line for long, he has just announced that he has signed a 2-year deal with the Raiders. And the first thing that comes to mind for me is the relationship and the battle that he has had over the last couple of years with Antonio Brown and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they're now teammates in Oakland. Well, apparently he was asked this, and he said, what is over is over, and we'll just get on with things now as teammates. But keep your eyes on that. Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict, Mike Mayock, John Gruden and company, they continue to make moves right now in Oakland. Clay Matthews moves on. He goes to the Rams on a 2-year deal. Of course, the Rams yesterday signed Blake Bortles. Matthews still a little bit left in the tank for him. I think the biggest question that he has had is they kept on moving him around. You know, it's like he was never really set at one particular position defensively. We'll see what's next there for Clay Matthews. Still got a couple of good years left. Randall Cobb goes to the Dallas Cowboys, a 1-year deal, $5 million. I could feel it right now here in Jacksonville. Was he worth 1 year, $5 million? Was Jacksonville interested? I have no idea. Was Randall Cobb interested? That's perhaps the more important question. Randall Cobb probably believes he's got a better chance to make the playoffs by going to play for the Dallas Cowboys, and obviously they're also a heck of a lot more of a recognized team than us here in Jacksonville. The Cowboys have also met with Eric Berry, Malik McDowell, and Robert Quinn. So still bringing in some pretty big names defensively. All right, here are the numbers on the Jags, and I thought they did a really good job with some of these contracts, and these are the cap numbers for the Jags of the newly signed players over this last couple of days. This is according to Phil Heilman of the Florida Times Union. Jeff Swaim, $2 million against the cap. Chris Conley, $1.8 million. Cedric Ogbuehi gets a veteran minimum, which is really $805,000. I don't have the terms yet on Jake Ryan, who officially did sign today for the Jaguars. The biggest one that stands out for me there is Chris Conley, $1.8 million. I mean, you just take in the context that they gave Dante Moncrief $9.6 million a year ago, and they're giving him $1.8 million this year. Remember, 2016, Connolly and Foles were teammates together when they did play for the Kansas City Chiefs. Eric Flowers signed a 1-year deal today with the Washington Redskins as well. There you go, an abbreviated edition of Truth Teller News and Notes brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. Folks, if you are aware of a situation where someone has been severely hurt, even if a death did occur, unfortunately, to a friend of yours, to a loved one, just go to truckcrashlaw.com. They're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is what they do. This is their expertise. So go to them today. They're fantastic folks. That's truckcrashlaw.com.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, Denny Thompson is here. It's time for the Sports Den.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, doing great today. Great day.
Crazy stat about this 2014 NFL draft quarterbacks, isn't it? You see this?
I always love looking back at quarterbacks years prior. What's the latest?
14 quarterbacks taken in the 2014 NFL draft. One still with the same team. Derek Carr.
Sure.
One.
Yep.
It's not a good hit rate.
It's not. There's too much pressure on these teams where you have to win now. If not, they're out.
Now, Jimmy G, I mean, he's worked out, right? I guess you can say that.
Yeah, he has, but he could also be a flash in the pan. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of body of work. He looked great when Jacksonville went out there late in the season in 2017.
Yeah, he did.
But how many starts does he have? Less than 12?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's less than 12.
He's got, what, 8?
Well, he won his last 6 that year, right? He was 6-0.
Right.
10 that.
Because he even got hurt when,
what, 3 or 4 games this year?
When Brady was hurt, I think he started 3 of those games.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's probably a dozen or right under.
Man.
I mean, it's funny to look at some of these names that were that year, Taj Boyd and Logan Thomas and Teddy Bridgewater, all these guys.
Like, I think Teddy Bridgewater can still play. Logan Thomas always seemed to be, you know, probably better served as a receiver. Taj Boyd, what was that, Pitt?
No, that was Clemson.
That's right, Clemson.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Johnny Manziel, Aaron Murray, Zach Mettenberger.
Welcome to the ACC, Blue.
You know what it is?
I mean, I was thinking of, well, that
it's
year.
It's late, man. It's late.
That one year they left Stout in. Was it Clint Stout instead of Deshaun Watson?
I don't know.
Yeah. Florida State won that game in overtime. I think it's the last time they beat Clemson. Deshaun Watson would have beat him as a true freshman if that was back still during the days of Clemsoning. Because if he had left Deshaun Watson in, Clemson goes into Tallahassee and beats Florida State that year. That's the year they win. Carlos Williams scored that touchdown in overtime.
Okay. It's just, I look at this list, and here's all I can think of is all the experts that told us that Zach Mettenberger had a huge arm and he was going to be a star, and Johnny Manziel should be a top 5 pick. It's just, I guess I get caught up in it. Everybody gets caught up in it. But when you have 14 quarterbacks drafted and only one 5 years later on the same team, that is crazy.
And everyone remembers the NFL draft. I mean, being from a pro city, you very rarely remember an NBA draft unless you have a lottery pick.
Right.
Look how hard it is for these first rounders in baseball. Because they come out of high school, they come, you know, from, you know, internationally speaking, and how many of those end up making it? You can go back to the story here about Murray. Even though he was a first-round draft pick, there's nothing close to a guarantee that he would ever make it in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no, very true. And it's would hard. He have been a first-round draft pick if football didn't threaten?
Who knows? What's coming up?
Yeah. Going to get into some Johnny Manziel, some draft talk, of course. I'm going to look at – I haven't looked at Hayes' 7-round mock.
I
haven't looked at it yet on purpose.
Oh, you want to do it live on air?
I want to see it live on air because if it's wrong, I want to cuss him a little bit.
I don't. You know what? I think.
Spoiler alert me now.
I'm not going to do it. He just overdoes one position early on. I can see where you're going to have an opinion on that.
Okay. Well, we'll hit that.
He overdoes a position.
Overdoing a position. If it's not up front, if it's not the front seven, don't take more than one.
All right, Denny Thompson coming up right now along with James Coleman. That'll do it. Final look at our poll tonight, Matt LaVey. How did it turn out?
Yeah, Rick, we put it out there. Now that Tate Martell is immediately eligible to play for the Hurricanes, who's going to be the starter against Florida? Well, 72% say it's a runaway. It will be Tate Martell. 15% going with Nakosi Perry, and just 12% say Jaren Williams.
All right, there you have it. Tonight's show brought to you by Advanced Disposal. Right now they are hiring in Clay County, a signing bonus of $1,500. Just go to advanceddisposal.com/careers. Again, you need a CDL, a commercial driver's license, and that's good for Clay County, a $1,500 signing bonus. Advanceddisposal.com/careers. Beginning tomorrow night, we are back from 7 until 9. That includes Thursday and Friday. We're on the road both Thursday and Friday, including Gators Dockside during Thursday night's program. Tomorrow night, right out of the gate, Seth Greenberg from ESPN at 7:20. We'll also hear from the Philly Godfather tomorrow night. We'll get the very latest as far as the numbers and the movement there. So that'll be part of Wednesday night's show. My name is Rick Ballew for producer Matt LaVey. We'll talk with you again tomorrow from 7 until 9 on 92.5 FM.